And so there was a deep desire on the part of the American people to believe in this better world on Mars. So it was a combination of the science of the time and the sociology that led people to want to believe and to actually believe in the life on Mars.
That's David Barron, and I'm Dan Skinner. This is Conversations. David Barron has covered astronomy and planetary exploration for over 30 years. He's a former science correspondent for NPR and science editor for PRI's The World. His previous books include American Eclipse and The Beast in the Garden. He joins us to talk about The Martians, the true story of an alien craze that captured turn-of-the-century America. David, welcome to Conversations.
Thank you so much, Dan.
How did you become interested in telling the story of this Mars mania?
Well, it stems from my childhood. I grew up in the 1960s, and when I was a kid, it often felt like I was surrounded by Martians. On Saturday morning cartoons, there was Marvin the Martian with Bugs Bunny. There was a popular sitcom in the 1960s called My Favorite Martian. There were Martians in comics and Martians in science fiction novels. And, you know, I grew up, I became a science writer, and I wondered where that all came from. What is it about Mars that has captured the public's imagination like no other planet? And that's what led me to do the historical research that just, in the end, flabbergasted me. I had no idea that back at the early part of the 20th century, before Martians were staples of science fiction, they were widely believed to be scientific fact.
There's so much in this book. We won't have a chance to talk about all of it. So before we talk about a few specifics, give us an overview of what readers are going to find here.
You know, I've been a science writer for 40 years, and my goal in writing about science has always been to appeal to people who don't think they care about science. That, you know, I think the best way to tell a science story is to tell a human story. And this is really a story about people, about a fascinating time. And even though the book is called The Martians, it's really about human beings and why we believe what we believe and how ideas spread. So it's written in the style of a novel, but it's all 100% true. You know, it's a story about how this idea of a civilization on Mars came about. There is really an operatic cast of characters, astronomers, writers, and others. But the main character is an American astronomer named Percival Lowell, who came from New England. He was from the Lowells of Massachusetts, one of the wealthiest families in New England at the time. He, like all of the men in the family, graduated from Harvard. He had more money than he knew what to do with. And when he approached the age of 40, he decided he was going to become an astronomer. And he founded an observatory in Flagstaff, Arizona, that's still there, the Lowell Observatory, dedicated his life to the study of Mars. And he, as some was true of some other astronomers at the time, was seeing these strange lines on Mars, these very straight, almost artificial-looking lines that came and went with the seasons, that people wondered what they were. And it was Lowell, more than anyone, who pushed the idea that these lines were actually irrigation canals on Mars. And it started as a kind of an interesting theory, and before long it was being embraced as almost fact that there really was this civilization on Mars.
And the other thing about this time period is there was a lot going on that kind of contributed to the fact that people could believe this and they would think that that was really happening on Mars because so many things were happening here on our planet.
Precisely. I mean, so it was a couple of things. First, it was an astonishing time in terms of science and technology. It seemed that anything was possible. The early 1890s is when the modern bicycle came along. You know, before that, we had those crazy penny farthings with one giant wheel and one tiny wheel. Well, the modern bicycle came along in the 1890s, which was a revolution in transportation. Before long, you have the automobile. Then the Wright brothers come along. People are flying. I mean, we're talking in two decades from the bicycle to the airplane. The discovery of X-rays, the discovery of radio waves. It just was an astonishing time. And so anything seemed possible, and that could include life on Mars, intelligent life on Mars. But also, it was, you know, we remember it as the Gilded Age. It sounds like a wonderful time. Well, it actually was a very difficult time on Earth. There was a tremendous divide, of course, between the small number of rich and the many who were poor. There was violent labor unrest. There was anarchism. The anarchists in Europe were blowing up cafes in Europe, assassinating heads of state. It was an anarchist who killed President McKinley in the U.S. in 1901. People were kind of feeling like they were wishing that the Earth were a better place and hoping for a better world. And Mars was thought to be a place of peace, populated by these moral beings that could in fact be a civilization we should emulate. And so there was a deep desire in the part of the American people to believe in this better world on Mars. So it was a combination of the science of the time and the sociology that led people to want to believe and to actually believe in the life on Mars.
And it's very interesting to read as you recount how this permeated all walks of life, and especially with people who had perhaps more money than they knew what to do with, would incorporate Martians into their celebrations and parties, et cetera. Tell us a bit about that.
Right. Well, actually, I opened the book with a little bit of that. Again, this was the Gilded Age, and quite a character back then named Mamie Fish, who actually shows up in the HBO series, The Gilded Age. She was kind of an acid wit. She loved to throw these zany parties. And she, at a dinner party in the early part of the 20th century, she threw a dinner party where a Martian showed up. I mean, obviously, it was someone portraying a Martian, but he showed up at the dinner party. But that just was emblematic of what was going on. The Martians were showing up in all aspects of society. You could see Martians in vaudeville skits and on the Broadway stage. Martians became the subject of Tin Pan Alley songs. There was a popular Martian in the comics, in the newspapers, named Mr. Skygak from Mars, who I'm told was the first alien being to show up in a comic strip. They were showed up in advertising. So, you know, the Martians really invaded popular culture at that time, and they never left. I mean, this gets back to when I was a kid in the 1960s. Martians, in some ways, even today, Martian is a synonym for alien, right? We don't talk about Venusians or Saturnians, it's Martians. And again, that's all because of this era that I write about.
Let's talk a little bit more about Lowell, because he started this craze. And then later on, it eventually waned. So I'm curious about how things may have shifted for him, what we know about his thoughts about Mars later in his life.
So there's an interesting trajectory of this belief in the Martian civilization. In the 1890s, when Percival Lowell first got involved and thought and said that there was this network of irrigation canals on Mars, it was an interesting theory, not proven. But by like 1907, 1908, he had really convinced many, many people that he was right. I mean, by the end of 1907, the Wall Street Journal, one of the most serious newspapers in the country, one of the most conservative newspapers in all ways, said the biggest news of 1907 was proof of intelligent life on Mars. So 1908, 1909, I see as the real kind of the climax of this period of belief, and Percival Lowell was riding high. He was being seen as this, you know, this great scientist who made this amazing discovery. But it all started to crumble in 1909 when Mars made made its closest approach to Earth in quite some time. And whenever Mars comes close to Earth, of course, you can see it better in a telescope. It's larger, it's brighter, and astronomers could make out the surface features better. And Mars was always hard to see through a telescope from Earth, and these lines on Mars, not everyone saw them. But in 1909, particularly, there was an astronomer in Europe, in France, who previously had seen these so-called canals on Mars. He had mapped them. He believed they were real. But he started to question his own eyesight and whether he was being tricked by some kind of optical illusion. And in 1909, he had access to the largest telescope in Europe, looked through it on a night when the skies over Paris were absolutely clear and still, and he had just a spectacular view of Mars. And he knew where these supposed canals were, and they were no longer there. I mean, when he had a really, really clear view of Mars, where these lines were, there was just naturalistic shading and stippling and that sort of thing. And he realized it was the eye's propensity to connect dots. And when you can't see something very clearly, it can infer lines that aren't there. And this then became the beginning of Lowell's downfall. This astronomer in Paris named Antoniadi took it upon himself to bring Lowell down. And, you know, by the early part of the 19-teens, Lowell's theory had pretty much fallen into disfavor among astronomers. The public still very much loved this idea of the Martians, but among astronomers, Lowell was pretty well seen as having been kidded himself about what he saw on Mars. But Lowell, by the time he died in 1916, he never gave an inch. He still was fighting on behalf of the Martians, and he saw himself as a persecuted genius who eventually would be proven right. On the one hand, it's kind of a sad tale, but actually Lowell, when he died, the obituaries were glowing. I mean, the newspapers knew that his science was wrong, but he had so inspired the American public to get excited about outer space, to dream of beings on other planets. And Lowell really did have a very big positive impact in terms of inspiring science fiction and actually helping to inspire the space age himself. So my book is both a cautionary tale about how we can hoodwink ourselves into believing things that are false, but it's an inspiring tale about how important imagination is in driving civilization forward, driving exploration, and getting us into outer space.
And as you mentioned earlier, this story, true story, has an amazing cast of characters. And at one point, they were trying to figure out, well, how do we communicate with the people on Mars? And Tesla came into the picture at that point as well.
Right. So Nikola Tesla, who was a true genius, he was, you know, he's the man who really developed our modern system of electrical power generation and distribution. He famously had this war of the currents with Thomas Edison, whether we should have alternating current or direct current. But Tesla was, so again, Tesla really was an electrical genius. And in the 1890s, he was famous, he was rich, he was in the newspapers all the time. Having done work on the distribution of electricity by wires, he got interested in wireless. Today, we would call it radio. And he was a pioneer in radio. And in 1899, he spent the better part of a year in Colorado Springs, Colorado. He constructed an experimental laboratory to study how electricity is propagated through the earth and through the air. And he would listen for radio signals. Now, this is before anyone was sending out artificial radio signals. He was just listening to the sounds of the planet. Lightning bolts will send out clicks and pops that you can hear in a radio receiver. And he was listening to the sounds of the earth one night, and he heard this very strange signal that came in triplets. It was a very quiet click, 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 click over his receiver. And it kept repeating, and he couldn't figure out where it could be coming from on Earth or maybe the sun. And he convinced himself that, well, this must be the Martians, Percival Lowell's Martians, trying to reach out to us. And when Tesla announced that to the world, this whole Mars craze just really took off. And so when Tesla said he received radio signals from Mars, there were then all sorts of plans for how we would communicate back to the Martians. Tesla, of course, wanted to to construct a whole network of radio transmitters to do that. There was an idea about maybe constructing a whole farm of mirrors that would flash sunlight at Mars, like a kind of Morse code in that way. And so people very much wanted to get in touch with the Martians and to see what they could teach us.
Well, as you pointed out, our fascination with Mars and Martians has never truly waned. It's still there. And in our modern times, we're still talking about going to Mars and still looking for life on Mars. And some thinking maybe they found microbial, you know, hints that there was life on Mars. Tell us a little bit about the state of our Mars fascination today.
Well, so in fact, In mid-September this year, NASA held a press conference to announce the strongest evidence yet for past life on Mars. Not proof, but very suggestive evidence in a rock that was discovered by the Perseverance rover last year. Found some staining in the rock that was then studied by the instruments on the rover that found these are minerals that in an environment like this rock was deposited on Mars, if this were Earth, we would say that clearly this was deposited by microbial life. And early in Mars's history, we're talking several billion years ago, we know water flowed on the surface. It had a thicker atmosphere. It was warmer than it is today. It certainly was habitable. Perhaps it was inhabited by microbes. So, you know, there remains a very serious discussion about the possibility of past life on Mars. And if life once existed on Mars, it could still be there. There could be microbes underground. But of course, you've got folks like Elon Musk who want to send life to Mars. And it's not just Elon Musk. There's a group called the Mars Society that for almost 30 years has been pushing this idea of spreading humankind to Mars. And I think it will happen. I don't know that it's, I hope in my lifetime we will actually see the first astronauts on Mars. I don't think we're going to see a city on Mars anytime soon. But I do think Mars is our future. And there is today kind of a Mars craze, sort of like the one I write about in my book that occurred more than a century ago. Back then, people projected onto Mars this vision of a better planet. We really wanted to believe that the Martians were real. I think it's a similar thing happening today. Elon Musk wants to create a better civilization on Mars. He wants to leave Earth's problems behind. It's a wonderful idea, but if we go to Mars, will we really be able to leave the problems of humanity behind? I don't know. I think we may be kidding ourselves.
I'm curious, as you went through the process of putting this book together, what did it sort of teach you about the nature of humans, and what did it teach you about yourself?
It certainly taught me that human beings, as you know, we all are fallible. You can be incredibly smart. But Percival Lowell was, you know, he was highly educated, highly persuasive and articulate, but he could not get past his own biases and his own ego and his own need to believe that his theory was right. And this, I mean, I was astonished the way this idea spread. You know, there were brilliant people, Alexander Graham Bell, you know, inventor of the telephone, who by the early part of the 20th century was really an elder statesman of American science. He had been the president of the National Geographic Society, someone highly, highly regarded. He was totally on board with Percival Lowell's theory. So I was astonished the way ideas can spread. But we see it today. I mean, it's even easier today with social media. But an idea doesn't have to be true to be widely embraced. In fact, the truth has very little to do with it. I think it says more about what we really hope is true than what is true.
To learn more, the book is The Martians, the true story of an alien craze that captured turn-of-the-century America by David Baron. David, thank you for talking with me today.
Oh, Dan, it was my pleasure. A lot of fun.
You'll find more interviews on a wide variety of topics at kansaspublicradio.org/conversations. You can use the KPR app to listen to the latest episodes on your phone or tablet, and you'll also find us on Facebook. I'm Dan Skinner. Thanks for listening.